The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
And good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're at in the world today. It could be any one of 203 countries that regularly visit our site. I'm your host, Ed, the Urban Farmer, along with my illustrious co-host,
Marianne.
And we're here on another fine, beautiful Monday. Just barely made it here myself because I was spending some great time with my friend Alan. He'd come over and we were eating pizza before the show.
I was hoping you would show up.
Yes, well, I was here. Yes, so. Hi, folks. Welcome to another night of Crystal Web. Maybe not be the Crystal Web any longer. A little later on, we'll talk about floating some new ideas of names because we want your opinion. And so how's your week been, Marianne?
You always throw me when you ask me that because you spent the week with me. My week has been okay. I've been working on a custom order for a lady, and so I've kind of been involved with that, and trying to get some new listings up. As you know, I've been taking lots of pictures and trying to get them cropped and ready to go. People probably don't always realize that when you sell stuff on the web, you have to take really good pictures, and that's not near as much fun as making this stuff. But you got to do it.
Well, you like taking some pictures, right?
Well, sure, but taking 500 pictures and cropping them can be kind of tedious after a while.
I can imagine. Yeah. I can see that it would be rather tedious.
Yeah. This time I only took like 300, so it wasn't quite as bad, but it's a lot of work, but, you know, in order for people to buy what you sell online, you want them to be able to see it and see that well. Otherwise, why would they buy it if they can't see it?
Agreed.
Yeah. So that's what I've been doing for the last several days, and now I get ready to list some stuff.
But you've also been, you had another Crystal Web piece this week. Did you not?
Yes, someone wrote to me and sent me a location, and I have not got it on my map yet. If you're listening, I apologize, but I will try and get that taken care of after the show tonight. I've kind of got, today when I had to take you back to the train, and then I kind of got sidetracked, and I've kind of neglected my work today. I got involved in working on something on the internet. Actually, I was looking for something that we were talking about earlier. I was looking for a CD, and that's another story altogether. But anyway.
Okay.
I kind of got sidetracked, as you know I can do, and I haven't even answered my email today. I don't know what to say.
I gotcha.
I'm just not with it today.
Huh. Well, you know, not everybody's perfect on every day. Myself, you know, I'm making the very broad, I guess people have been hearing me all day, and talking about the new CEOs of Witchful, which I'm not. anymore. I really appreciate everybody who's been involved so far. Wow, we don't have anybody in our chat room.
Really? I thought there was people in there earlier.
Oh, okay. I'm not seeing it, but that's okay.
Okay. Well, I was there a minute ago, but...
That's
they're
okay.
All guests. All we have is guests.
Well, we love
have
our guests.
People, yes, with actual accounts that have logged in.
Yeah. Unusual. Well, we appreciate everybody who listens into our show and does so. If you have any questions tonight, 347-308-8222, you can give us a call. Let's go ahead and get on our subject. We're talking about the carbon footprint. And as Alan and my friend Alan and Brendan were making jokes on it, it's very hard hunting carbons. You have to find their footprints.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I wish that were true, because it's not true, because carbon is really easy to find. And so really quick, I guess everybody always asks the argument about carbon footprints. And what is a carbon footprint? It is the amount of carbon you're putting in the air. And people tend to think of carbon, they hear it as carbon dioxide. There's a couple of carbons, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide. And everybody says that it seems to have an effect on our atmosphere, that it's helping warm up our atmosphere. And the amount of carbon we're putting into the atmosphere may or may not be, but they're trying to say that it's causing global, first it was global cooling, then global warming, now they're saying climate change, with mostly the preference towards heating it up. And last year, we were the hottest year on record in the United States, whatever that's supposed to mean. And so one of the things that people are now asking about your carbon footprint is how much carbon do you use to get what you need or where you travel or whatever you do, you generate carbon in the process of it if you're using any sort of industrial means.
And so in this instance, the bigger the footprint, the better it is or the worse it is?
The worse it is.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, if you're a Bigfoot, it means you're using lots of carbon. And a good and rappers are big feet.
Let's and go what? Ahead. And what?
Like rappers. Rappers, celebrities, what? Movie stars.
What? What? Rapper? A rapper? Is that
rappers.
What you're saying? Why?
Rappers.
Why are they?
Because they all praise this sort of big car, you know, limousines, big cars, Escalades. Using private jets to travel everywhere.
Instead of traveling with the hoi polloi and or the other low life than in the coach, you mean? Is that what you're saying?
Or even in first class, because the plane, it doesn't matter if you're in first class or coach, you're using the same amount of carbon.
Oh.
Maybe a little bit more because of the fact, you know, when they calculate it, because you're kind of in a little bit of a bigger spot. But, yeah, no, they're using a whole different plane, which has to be fueled up, get to running, and running operating. The more people you transport in a vehicle, the better you are for your carbon footprint. And so and there's kind of this worship of the big – I guess that's the best way to phrase it. There's kind of this worship of the big host, the big thing. You know, the bigger the car, the better you are.
Well, then Californians – unless they've changed in the last 10 years, they're very guilty of that as well, because they all like to drive their own cars.
Right.
They don't really like to carpool. They don't like to they don't like to take mass transit. They just like to be in their car.
Right. Well, Californians worship their cars, let's be honest. I mean, they are kind of car worshippers, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, that's their lifestyle. But in, because of this, carbon used to be smog. The pollution used to be smog. And if I understand right, California has almost a completely set of different emission standards than the rest of the country, much more strict emissions as a transmitter than other parts of the country because of that.
That is really true. You have to pass a smog test every other year. And if you do not pass it, you have to bring your vehicle up to code or you can't drive. They will not renew your plates. When you get your license plate renewal in the mail every other year, there's a little thing that says smog check on it, and you have to go get one. I'm very familiar with that. I've had many of those. And if you're driving a car that's really older, then it has to have special license plates, and you have to pay more because you're driving a car that's a polluter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's basically, pollution is mostly made up of carbon, unburnt fuel, unburnt oil, partially burnt products, as well as carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide that is produced as a byproduct. So the exhaustion is really what we call would call carbon for the biggest part. And it used to be that L.A., I guess L.A., when I was in California, 1980s, we used to call it the big stink when we'd come in. You could, when we were driving up to it, it had this sort of shit brown coloring to the city's air above it.
It would depend on which way the wind was blowing. If there was like an inversion layer and there was no on or offshore flow, yeah, it would be brown. But it got better as time went on. Actually, the longer I lived there and the more they were trying to implement more, you know, with gasoline and the smog checks and everything, it got better.
Well,
but
it had to.
It's still, though, I mean, it was a matter of weather patterns more than anything else. I mean, if you got, like I say, if you had an on or offshore flow, you were okay. But when, you know, things just, usually it happened in the summertime, they just settled in, then it would just clamp right down on it, and it wouldn't go anywhere.
Right.
That's how come they had such strict laws, is because, you know, the weather pattern made things worse.
And, in truth, great parts of different cities. I mean, Chicago had a smog problem for a while, too, but it's gotten better. And we have ozone, what they call ozone problems, which is saying that our ozone gets too thick. And it gets hard for people to breathe. So all of these things are to contribute. And the idea behind it is the more that you add to this, the way you live can add to this carbon. And so while you can see, well, yeah, if I drive less, if I have a good clean engine, if my car burns the fuel more up, we'll have better air. But that's not the only thing that you have a carbon footprint for. Unless you're growing your fruits and vegetables, unless you have a banana orchard or a banana grove right next to your city, bananas are coming generally from South America or one of the islands. So the price of your bananas may not include the fact what's it going to cost to clean up the carbon. And so right now, putting carbon in the atmosphere is free, except if where governments such as California are restricted from emissions and things like that. But there's no tax right now on saying you can put as much carbon as you want into the air. It's a byproduct. And while there's certain pollution standards, as long as you're fitting into those pollution standards, you don't have to worry about it. So as long as you have a clean boat and a clean truck to bring it in, the government doesn't say anything.
Actually, you know what the number one producer of smog and that kind of thing is in California? Barbecues.
Right. You can tell us.
Barbecues. Yeah. That's
really?
The number one smog producer. And the second one is leaf blowers. They started to ban leaf blowers in several places before I left. Gasoline-powered ones. They could use electric ones, but they couldn't use gasoline-powered ones. So, believe it or not, it wasn't the cars. By that point, it was people barbecuing and leaf blowers because there were so many gardeners in Southern California. It was incredible how many gardeners there were. Nobody did their own yard work. Nobody. It was all done by gardeners. And gardeners all use leaf blowers because it's faster and cheaper to blow stuff than it is to rake it. But unfortunately, that did really bad things for the air. So the city of Los Angeles itself had banned them. The county, no, but the city itself had. I don't know what's happened since then, whether more cities have done it or not. but that's how bad it was, that they actually had to ban leaf blowers, gasoline-powered leaf blowers, because of that.
And that's an example. So they're using carbon and putting pollution in the air to have a good-looking yard.
And because it's much cheaper and faster to do it that way than it is to rake it, yeah. So it's a matter of time is money, I guess. If you have to pay somebody to rake, you're paying them more than if you're paying them to just blow the leaves.
Right. And unless, like, somebody does something, to do something about it, then that fact is, as long as it's easier, and as long as it's easier and cheaper to do it that way, they're going to. And nobody charges for a carbon footprint.
Not yet.
I suspect
it's only a matter of time, especially in places like California and some of the bigger cities. And it probably won't be individuals. It'll probably be companies, I would guess.
Right.
I mean, I'm surprised they haven't done it yet, to be honest.
What's that?
Started charging company. Well, they do charge them for gross polluting, right?
This is one of the big Obama administration. Well, they do charge. They charge a lot of people. I mean, they charge a lot of people for it.
What?
They do charge a lot of people for it.
How?
Not directly, but like plants. Power plants could charge a lot of money to take care of their carbon emissions.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean. Can you explain it?
Sure. Well, power plants get fined if they don't take care of their emissions.
Right.
If they don't take care of their emissions, they get fined. They get plus they have to pay big money to get it taken care of. And there's something called carbon emission. When you take a carbon emissions and basically, I'm trying to remember how you phrase it. It's a certificate that says you buried so much carbon. You took care of this much carbon out of a normal process. You get to sell it to somebody who can put more carbon into the air.
I know what you're talking about. That's just the most bizarre thing. I think if you create carbon, you should have to pay for it. You can't be, like, you know...
It's called cap and trade as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Saying we only should put so much money, and you could trade... So, like, say I set up a bunch of trees together, and I could possibly say they eat so much... they eat so much carbon, you know, that they eat so much carbon. And you go, oh, yeah, okay. And then you can sell that to somebody, say, like a polluter.
That's insane. That doesn't even make any sense.
Right. Because, so let's say I sequester. It's called sequestering. That's it.
Okay.
Same nasty word they're using for something else. And so they sequester it, and you can then turn around and sell them. I mean, that's kind of one of the things that people don't like because they feel that that's going to turn into a kind of a gimmick.
Well, it is. It's. I don't know how, because some person's putting, you know, taking more of it out of the air, and you're putting more in, that it should balance itself out. I think. That's nuts. But
right.
There you go. There's a lot of crazy stuff like that that goes on.
So that's kind of one of the things they say. So that, and then if you save it, then somebody else can sell it. So that's one of the solutions of carbon. But they're saying that carbon can cause us a lot of problems. So they can talk about how much it is.
So their companies can be charged, fined for being gross polluters, right? That is true. So far, individuals, not so much.
Not so much because, again, they don't want to do that. So they don't want, and unfortunately, let's be honest, the people who do it, right? People who
are doing it. They don't want to charge the individual because they'll protest, because they'll call it a tax. They'll say that's bad for the environment.
What's bad for the environment?
Yeah, that's bad for the economic environment if you start charging.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it's good for the environment.
Right. So the average American household puts out 2 metric tons of CO2 a year in the state of Illinois.
Wow, that seems like a lot.
It is a lot. I mean, that's huge. That's each family. So the city of Chicago puts out approximately 8 million tons, metric tons of carbon a year.
Mm.
Now, one of the other big things of producing the carbon is cows, which is methane, and volcanoes. So that's
well,
a big
volcanoes
one.
We really don't have any control over.
No. And right. And so that's one of those things that is important. Now, and one of the big things, so carbon is what's generated no matter what you do. And the thing is that one of the arguments is that how you live your life tells a lot about so how you live your life. Important too. Okay, I was looking up. Somebody was sending me something. I just want to look up.
Okay.
There's a thing called carbonfootprint.com, and they have a calculator on it. Carbonfootprint.com. And I was just checking out the cost. Say you want to take a flight to see your family. Do you know that a single person flying on economy class plane from Chicago to Los Angeles produces 0.55 metric tons of carbon? That's a lot. Half a metric ton. So the question really comes down to is our carbon footprint causing damage? Is it causing any pain? You know, does it really have an effect on the atmosphere? That's debatable. That's been a big debatable. But there are so many coincidental events that are showing that it might be. And so the problem is we have this sort of runaway carbon. And the only thing that we can really expect for it is we could use heavy-handed methods like the government taxing it, but people could also just reduce it on their own.
Well, but will they? That's always the question, isn't it?
Right. An example is I found out that bananas are much higher on carbon. Oranges that are coming out of time is that. Any of your fruits and vegetables that are coming from South America or the southern states or California, and out of season, have a high carbon content. And I have heard that if you paid for the cleanup of that carbon from the atmosphere, which was the argument is that your food would be much, much higher priced. That the fact is carbon is subsidized by the government. And it's been up to this point, belief that it doesn't cause harm. Here's the big thing. Right now, from most people's point of view, except scientists and people who believe in global warming, is the official government point of view, this is that carbon has a very limited amount of damage to the environment, if any. And there's no direct parallel to the amount of carbon that we put into the atmosphere to the weather. I mean, that's really the scientific sort of governmental scientific point of view at this moment.
Mm.
Okay. I just want to make sure that that's understood for people.
Well, but...
But
they do... I mean, they don't know for sure, though.
Well, there's this where the
science... studies, right? They're all their studies.
Right. And then, and people point to the latest... You know, the fact that we haven't had snow all year in Chicago. I think Chicago is still having a record snow period of time.
Isn't that like, so that means it's global warming, the dreaded global warming?
That's the dreaded global warming. So I just found out the difference for me driving by train from Hoopston versus taking a car is 0.2 metric tons, but a train is 0.01 metric tons.
Really?
I use 1/20th amount of carbon to get from Chicago by taking a train.
Huh.
See, and that's kind of one of those things.
I wouldn't have believed that. I wouldn't have guessed that. I would think a train would produce more.
They calculated per person. How many people can the train carry?
Okay, I get you.
So I guess it would be really bad if I bought a train and said, you know, take me to Chicago and I'm the only passenger on it.
Right. I understand now.
But, so in that sense it is. So carbon is this sort of stuff we produce. So do cows. So do volcanoes. But the biggest fear of carbon right now is that it's locked up in our ice caps, both Antarctica and Arctic ice caps. And as those ice caps melt, they don't just release water. They also can release pockets of carbon. And for years now, I mean, for decades now, one of the things scientists have been doing is doing cores of it to find how it is. And they discovered that at various points of history, the glaciers absorb a lot of carbon. Take carbon out of the atmosphere and sequestered into the ice. Now as that ice melts, it's raising, it too now is raising carbon. And that's why they're calling it a runaway effect. There's a lot of people who believe, a lot of scientists who believe, the majority of scientists, as far as we can believe, that we're in the middle of a runaway carbon effect, and there's not much we can do about it other than survive it. And they have all sorts of predictions of what it's going to do.
So, you mean when the ice melts, it goes back as into a gas form? Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Okay.
It gets trapped in, like, snowflakes and rainwater and pockets of other stuff.
Uh-huh.
And for various reasons, carbon gets, you know, sequestered into, you know, it gets so cold that carbon dioxide begins to freeze up a little bit. And it gets inside, you know, air bubbles in the ice, and they pick the, depending on where the carbon of the atmosphere is. And this is a big thing people don't understand. Carbon has always varied in various amounts in our atmosphere. They believe that when the dinosaurs ran, that we had a much more oxygen-rich environment. And that helped the dinosaurs get so bloody big. Because they didn't have to...
Say that again?
They think that's why the dinosaurs were able to get so big.
Uh-huh.
Because there's more oxygen available.
Ah, okay.
So they had so they didn't have to work as hard to get oxygen to all parts of their body.
Okay.
And that when that changed, mammals were able to do it because mammals, while consuming lots of oxygen, are able to handle lower oxygen in the atmosphere. Thus, we evolve. But the dinosaurs, from what we can tell, is pretty tropical all the time. So this idea that we've had high carbon in our atmosphere and we've had a very warm planet is not new. Not even a little bit.
Right.
If we believe, if you believe in this fancy tale called evolution, if you believe that the planet might be as much as 4 billion years old, and it's not going this process, that we've had ice ages in the past, not just in the last couple of years, but 10,000, 12,000 years ago, there was a big ice age. And we're actually still coming out of that ice age. You know, and so we may be, so I'm not against the idea that this is, and we talk about this all the time, that it might not just, you know, human beings may be adding to it, but this might be just a natural cycle.
Well, you and I have talked about that, that we think it might very well be. Right.
And one of the things that's happening is it's being called solar summer. They've been marking that Mars and Venus and Earth are all warming, that all three of the planets seem to be getting warmer. And if that's true, then carbon might not be part of the problem. It's just there. It may be just the way the sun works. It has seasons. That's a possibility.
That it does what?
The sun might have seasons.
Seasons. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I wanted to make sure that's what you were saying. Okay.
They might be decades or even hundreds of years long. Right. But the sun itself might have seasons. It might heat up and cool down, you know, small bits over years, decades, even centuries. The fact is humanity has recorded so little time of information. We really don't know a lot.
Right. I mean, it's we're barely at 100 years, right?
Yeah, 100, 125 years, depending where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Of recording stuff, maybe 300 years of strong observation with our scientific method, and maybe no more than 10, 12,000 of any sort of written records or any sort of recordings of the weather. You know, now the Aborigines of Australia have recorded their weather every year for over 40,000 years. And that's one of the funny things. Because they have these caves that they put stuff in, and people go in there, and they just have to decipher them. But they actually mark, they have this ritual where they mark some of their sacred caves.
Right.
Where they've been living there. But even that is, you know, compared to the whole of time, that's very, very small. And, of course, it's very hard to figure out what they really meant, but sort of this idea. So we don't have a whole lot of weather information from the Earth point of view. You know, even if we had a million years worth of records, it'd still be less than 1/3 of 1% of the existence of the Earth. So we can't really be sure of our weather as this sort of carbon footprint. But measuring that is important. So things that you get from a distance is big carbon. Big cars are more carbon. And so this is why like things like the urban farming movement have become real important, because you're growing your food right where you live, near where you live, and therefore you're not spending as much on transportation.
Right.
And if you're using non-petroleum-based fertilizers, such as compost, that you get locally, you're not using more carbon. Because after all, gasoline, oil, kerosene, petroleum, plastic, they're all based on a concept called hydrocarbons. So all of those add to the total. And so the idea of limiting them is important. And you are picking up it. So when you get your clothes from China, even though they're cheaper because of the labor that's put in, the amount of carbon that's put into the atmosphere on your behalf is higher. Say if your shirt is made in Chicago, if you're a Chicagoan, or anywhere in the United States versus China. So the question is carbon something we should pay attention to?
Well, and that's where people might want to be more conscientious about the environment, but they clothes made in the United States are usually quite a bit more expensive than the ones made in other countries. So that's always a problem as well. I mean, it is. It is a problem.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It is a problem. Okay, we're at the bottom of the hour. I think I want to take a quick commercial and a quick music break and be right back. What
okay.
do you think, Marianne?
Okay.
And, all right, and there we go.
My Mystic Gems offers a unique and unusual variety of vintage and modern jewelry items. My handcrafted creations include steampunk jewelry, crystal and elemental designs, cosplay accessories, wish wands, and beautiful bullets, my signature line of piece jewelry. My designs are perfect for all gift occasions, including holidays, birthdays, and anniversaries, as well as bridesmaids and groomsmen's gifts for weddings. I do offer custom pieces and will work with you to create something special just for you. Visit my website at mymysticgems.com to find links to both my Etsy and Artfire stores online. You can contact me at mymysticgems@gmail.com.
Spirit, oh, make me whole. Pray a Shakti, Hoporiana, Rhea Martha Morrigan. Rhea Shakti, Hoporiana, Rhea Martha Morrigan. I risen up the goddess, oh, fill my soul. I risen up the spirit, oh, make me whole. She is a woman crowned with a crescent. She is the mother of all that lives. She is the earth that is spinning in starlight. She is the goddess of all that is. I risen up the goddess.
And it was Jennifer Cutting with Dancing with the Guy was the last one, which was a musical piece, which has a little bit to do with that. And before that was Farrah Shakti by Emma Rose. I thought Dancing with the Guy was pretty nice. Maybe a background for our new name that we're thinking about, some of the new names we're thinking about for the show.
But that, which one?
Oh, well, we wanted Angry Green Activist.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you said you were talking about background.
We decided that one was, you know, we weren't angry enough. We talked about that last week.
Well, I don't know whether we think we're not angry enough. Other people think we're not angry enough. So, you know, who are we to say, I guess?
Right. I mean, so we thought of other things, you know, we thought of things. And, well, you came up with one that I think is pretty good, and I want to hear people's opinion on it.
Okay.
You can write us at PaganTonight@ gmail.com and tell us what you think. But we're thinking about Gaia's Web, going from the Crystal Web, which is kind of focused on magic and psychic and all of that, to Gaia's Web, which includes all of that stuff, but more, the green stuff that we've been talking about, like the carbon footprint and things like that. And when you came up with it, I thought you did a really good job with it. If you don't know, Marianne's a wonderful wordsmith. If you're looking for trying to figure out words that you need for something, and hire Marianne, the answer lady. She will help you find words that you need.
Well, okay. Thank you.
Well, you've got an official word in the unofficial dictionary, or
one of those. I can't remember which one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those weird online dictionaries.
Because, and the word was for plague.
Plague. Which is short for password lag, which is that moment where you try and remember your password for a particular site, that pause while you stop and try and remember where you're at and what your password is.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess we all go through that every once in a while.
I sometimes have it more and more.
And you helped me with my new company. Yeah. And you helped me with the idea of Paganics. PAGINICS, which is the name of my company.
And Nature's Little Recyclers, too.
Nature's Little Recyclers. So she's pretty good at words.
Yeah, I guess I am. I guess so.
From there, we decided to guide as well. So what did you think about what that meant to you when you were thinking about it? Why did you think that might be a good way to go?
I don't know. I don't know whether I actually gave it any conscious thought. I liked the way it sounded, and I kind of liked what I thought it portrayed, which the something that came to my mind is we have a group called the Order of the Peace Weavers that Terry Helton is in charge of. And their symbol is a picture of the world with a spider web over the top of it. And I guess in my mind, that's kind of what I... In fact, I might even ask her if we can use that.
Okay.
Yeah, because to me, it's like... That just kind of came into my head when I thought of it when we were talking about, you know, I went from the crystal web to, you know, we were talking about Gaia. There was a couple other phrases that I thought up with Gaia in it, and then
together. We talked about Gaia activists. We talked about the Green Warriors. We had a lot. We were dancing around the word Gaia, and people had told us, we like the word Gaia.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, that's where that came from.
And so, tell us what you think, and should we just change the name of the show to that? Would it matter to you that we change the name of the show? Or we're just lost voices in the wind, where people are just, you know, people are listening. We see the numbers.
Yep. They just never say anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means.
Well, this is a chance for them to say something to us.
They can let us know what they think.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think, I also thought about We Yell At You Show. what is it, Ahmed the Dead Terrorist?
Yeah, we could do the shut up or kill you vote show. I thought about that, but, you know, that doesn't work too well.
No, I don't think so. Probably.
Yeah, but no. Because we want you to talk, and we want you to talk to us.
Well, or at least we do still want you to listen. We don't need you to go away mad.
No.
No.
Well, sometimes angry about the right reasons. We would love to have people, you know, get riled up and angry about things. And we've riled up our audience and things like that before, so... But okay, so let's go ahead and finish up on carbon. So is there anything that you feel about carbon? You know, what do you think about the whole idea of the carbon, you know, charging for carbon? Do you think, you know, you studied it somewhat. I mean,
well, okay, my problem is if you can actually go buy credits from somebody else that produces less, it seems like the whole thing is kind of silly then. That's all.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to produce, you know, massive amounts of pollution or carbon or whatever you want to call it, but you can go buy points from somebody else, then it just doesn't really seem fair somehow or another. I don't know. But then if the government's not going to step in and do
mm-hmm.
anything, if nobody's actually, if all they're doing is talking about it and nobody's actually
mm-hmm.
doing anything about it, then I'm not really sure what the point is. Rather than, okay, so people are aware of it, does that really mean they're going to actually do anything about it?
Right.
I mean, probably not. Unless they are going to be penalized in some way, I don't think
mm-hmm.
they're going to change their ways. I don't know that for a fact, but people have a tendency to either have to have a carrot or a stick in order to change their behavior.
Right.
So you either have to reward them in some way for doing
mm-hmm.
it, or you have to penalize them in some way. In order for it to actually be effective. I mean, you can talk about it all day long, but if people don't even know what it is and don't really care, then am I being too cynical?
No, I think you're not being too cynical.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I mean, at some point it might become imperative. It might become, you know, if we don't do this, you know, we're going to be in serious trouble. I mean, the ecologists and all those people have been saying it for years. If we don't do something pretty soon, you know, it's going to be serious. Well, maybe the time has finally come, because they've been saying this since, like, what, the 70s?
Yeah, they have
mm-hmm.
been saying since the 70s. And the problem with it is that they made it so political.
I'm sorry, what?
They made it so political. That's the biggest thing, I think, is and the problem that I have, is that in the 70s, they took this idea of carbon and all these problems. Instead of just being purely a scientific thing, people made it into a political fight.
I guess, yeah. I guess maybe that's a problem. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is to make people...
No.
I mean, you can make people aware, and you can try and tell them and, you know, talk about it on the radio and talk about it in commercials and all that stuff, but... It sometimes takes so long for it to sink in that way.
Right.
I think if we could figure out a way to reward people for it, it would be much more effective, but I'm not really sure how to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's it. We need to find answers. And I think that ultimately it can't be, at the end of the day, a government solution is just more oppression. I really do feel that.
Yeah. I mean... I can understand why they feel the need to fine gross polluters. I mean, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there needs to be some... Well, I mean, there's always the shame solution. I guess they could try that, but I don't know how well that would work. Not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something that you're finding out, that it might be possible to do. It's more effective with large companies that have a public image, I think.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm holding some companies accountable. That they do have some concepts of basically of how difficult. Hold on a second. I think one of the things I think that bothers me about this is that while people are doing the behavior and the sort of idea of the oppression of it, is that, and we might be wrong. I mean, At one time, they let us play with mercury. You know, the government did, and they said, oh, no, you know, bad mercury. We could be doing things. It could be that this is completely normal and natural, and that we need it for, you know, and we might be looking at a tropical paradise in 10 years, 20 years, when the, you know, atmosphere changes. And I think that's what it is. And the sort of idea of political answer, because they want a medal, it's really, really difficult for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But here comes the other side of it. Then are you going to go running to the government, if it is real? Are you going to go run to the government if you have a particularly bad hurricane, a particularly bad number of tornadoes because of this? Because you don't have any water, because we don't have any snow. I mean, we have had no real substantial snow down here in Hudson, Illinois.
No.
I mean, we're talking about farmers who may have dry fields come spring. Are they going to go, you know, so you go, well, I don't want the government to tax me on this, but if these things are directly tied to carbon, are you going to say, well, the government has to help me with this? And I think that's one of the things I think I have the biggest problem with. If you don't want the government to take and intervene on this, and you don't want to change your behavior, then why do you want the government to get involved with cleaning up from the consequences?
Well, because that's how a lot of people feel, you know. Unfortunately.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's that, well, no, I don't want to do anything about it, and I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but true.
You know, and then you have one side screaming, oh, this is the end of everything, and the other side saying, this is nothing. It's probably somewhere in the middle. It always is. But so that's what you should do. You take a look at it. Carbonfootprints.com. Great site. Has calculators. You can figure out what you're using for carbon footprint. You can talk about it. We'll probably visit this idea more in the future. And you know, please tell us what you think about Gaia's Web. If you like it, don't like it. You know, what do you think? Do you think we should change the name to it? Let us know at pagasonite@gmail.com. But I want to move on to another subject really quick. And I think it's kind of an interesting one, and that is, is this idea of, since we tackle on everything, and I want to tackle a little bit.
Okay.
As you know, a lot of people here, you know, people are crazy. But you had to deal with a phenomenon really recently, and with all the shootings, you sell jewelry, you sell bullets, beautiful bullets for peaceful causes. And one of the arguments is if a bullet is made into jewelry, you can't be used as a weapon. Right?
Right.
Can't be recharged. But you've run into, and I found this sound interesting that I want to talk about it, of people who don't feel like, in this whole debate of guns recently, are seeing you as promoting, you know, promoting violence.
Well, I've gotten mixed responses sometimes. Some people think that I'm anti-gun, which
mm-hmm.
I'm not necessarily anti-gun as such. You know, I think if you have a gun and you use it responsibly, that's not a problem. It's unfortunate
right.
for all those people that don't. And then some people think that like, well, oh, she's got all these bullets. She's, you know, must really like violence, which isn't true either. I think I make it pretty clear why I make them, but obviously not clear enough, evidently.
Right, and I think people get some of these sort of knee-jerk responses sometimes.
Mm. Yeah. Actually, I've gotten, like I say, mixed responses. It's kind of interesting. The kind of the responses I've got, but mostly positive, actually.
Right, and so you do this. So I thought that was interesting that you guys, you know, that people have had these sort of responses, and I guess it comes back to our earlier subject. What is your attitude? I think people just have such a chance to. I guess people get such an attitude towards people for perception. and not reality. And I think that's your beautiful book if you're caught up into it.
I have people's tendency to go off sometimes, you know, without checking into something more thoroughly. Or, you know, trying to figure something out. They just, a knee-jerk reaction, you know, and then later they go, okay, I see. Actually, a perfect example is right after, the same day as the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, I did not know that I had not been on, had the TV on all day, or really been wandering around on the internet, so I didn't know what was going on. And I had posted something on my Beautiful Bullets page, and some guy crawled all over me about it, that isn't there enough violence, and how dare you do this? And several people came to my defense and said, you know, that's not what she does. You know, she does just the opposite. But, yeah, I mean, without checking to see what actually I was about, I mean, he really let me have it. And then I think he later felt, you know, kind of like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, be that way. And I said, well, I'm sorry, too. I didn't know that, you know, that had happened, and or I wouldn't have, you know, probably posted anything. But, yeah, that's how quickly, you know, things can escalate, and without, you know, checking out what people are really about. So you should kind of maybe check it out before you jump all over people sometimes.
And, well, how can people... It is. And so how can people find your stuff?
They can find me at mymysticgems.com. And from there, I have links to both my Artfire store and my Etsy store. And actually, I'm getting ready to make a donation from my latest sales from Bullets. And I'm going to donate some money to one of the organizations that's collecting money for the Sandy Hook School.
Excellent.
So that's going to be my next donation. So yeah, that'll be good. There's a local chapter of the United Way that's collecting money for them. So it's right there in Newtown.
Okay, well that's excellent. I think that's going to be a thing, so you can check it out. Mm-hmm. People take a look at that and all the jewelry that you're making. You're making some new items too, so they can check it out and help us with our green asset. Let us know how you feel about it. Well, I think that's all the time we've got, Marianne.
Okay.
And we're going to leave you with a song tonight called Earth Mother by Todd Allen. So good night, Marianne.
Good night, everybody.
Earth Mother, come to me. Okay. Happy Monday, everyone. This is your host, Blue Fire Witch. And with me this week, who was filling in for Mark, since Mark is unable to join us right now because of his work schedule, but he's going to be rejoining us as soon as he can. My husband, Priest Christopher Aldridge, has been graciously stepping in to kind of fill Mark's spot while he's unable to be here. So welcome, Chris. You're on the air.
I'm here.
And tonight our topic is cyberpaganism, which is, you know, cyberpaganism kind of refers to all the ways that people explore and express their paganism online, which is it delves into several different things. And so we're going to try to talk about all of those things, or many of them at least, in the hour that we have with you. Now, we normally start off the show with a few, you know, news bits and things like that, and we also have a god of the week, so to speak, every week too. Chris, did you have any news that you wanted to talk about this week? Anything that's going on?
Not particularly. The only thing I had in mind when you brought it up was the two cases of pagan rights that are being fought right now. One is Christopher Penzack's temple. I believe he's already gotten the rights that he's wanted from the place that he's building at, but he also needs donations for a parking lot project, I believe it was, that his temple needs in order to function. So if you could put a link to that, and also if you could put a link to the, I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly what it was.
It's the Matrium of Seville. I think that's the one you're talking about.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, they are in a civil rights battle, and they need some funding for their defense fund. So those are the only two things I could think of at this moment.
Yeah, I know that the Christopher Penzack's Temple of Witchcraft, they've got their building permit, but in order for them, they set up in Salem, New Hampshire, and they've got their building permit, but in order for them to do all the things that they want to do there, they need to have a certain size parking lot. And parking lots are not cheap. He's raising money for that, and that's a noble cause. And then the Matrium of Seville is a little bit more complicated. I read about it online, and I also, you know, watched a video about it as well. And it's an interesting kind of, you know, thing that's going on there. Essentially, they used to have. They're a 501c3 company, so they're federally tax exempt, and they're also supposed to be tax exempt from the state and from the, you know, local municipality. And until recently, they never had to pay property tax. If you know, in certain areas of the country, property tax is exorbitant, and you know, one of those areas is in New York State. Almost everywhere around New York, property taxes are very, very high. You know, even after you buy, you know, and purchase the land, you have to pay for this, you know, yearly property tax. And some people's property tax alone can be $30,000-$40,000. It's a lot of money. And especially for small religious organizations, it can put you under just to pay your property taxes. So it's important for those organizations that have that are for a spiritual and charitable purpose to have property tax exemption, and they're exempt for that purpose, you know. But the Matrium of Seville is a small temple in I believe it's in the Catskills, New York. And I'll try to get a link to you guys so that you have some information about what's going on with the Matrium of Seville. I just found out about it a couple days ago, what was going on. But there is information about it that you can get online and to help them out and things like that, because it's a difficult situation. For those of you who are not familiar with the priestesses of Seville, the priestesses of Seville in ancient pagan times were essentially transgendered males. They were males without their male genitalia who lived as women. So that is, you know, early transgenderism. That's the best way to put it. You know, I'm not sure if they used those terminologies back in ancient times. They probably did not. But they did refer to these people who were born male as priestesses. So that to me seems like a gender transformation. The modern day matron of Seville is it's essentially a place for, you know, transgendered females, people who were born male, but now live as women, and so it's an interesting kind of crossover, and I'm not sure exactly why some of the LGBT organizations haven't gotten a hold of this, considering the nature of the church. But I really think that, you know, that they've been discriminated against because of, you know, not only because they're transgender, but because they're pagans.
Mm-hmm. I think that the opposition is probably hoping for them to go under because of their property taxes. That's probably why they're trying to withhold their right to be tax exempt as long as they can. I don't think that they actually think they can legally hold it from them. I think what they're trying to do is stall as long as they can in hopes that they won't be able to stay open any longer. That's my personal opinion on it.
You may be right, and it's horrible to think those things about our government, but, you know, there's a lot of distrust and dislike of both the pagan community and the transgender communities in this country. And, you know, when you see an organization that embodies both of those, they get double the, you know, you can expect double the dislike and double the discrimination. And, you know, it's just disheartening that the essentially what happened is that they went to court for this, and a judge, you know, ruled against them and said that they didn't do enough spiritual activities there. Well, if you look at their website, they do spiritual activities all the time, like 5-6 times a week they're doing spiritual activities. So, you know, if you think about your regular church, most churches have service on one day a week, you know, so they're doing just as much as a regular church would. You know, it just so happens that they also use the property to house essentially refugees, people who are not welcome other places. And because of that, and because of who they are, I think they're being discriminated against.
Yeah, I believe so too. I don't think it's our government as a whole. It's just that there's some bad apples in government, and there's bad apples like the judge you're talking about, who is obviously of a discriminatory mind, and that person is put in a position of power over other people. It's happened all throughout our history, so it's still a problem that we have to deal with.
Yeah, it is. I put a couple links in the chat room. One is for Chris Penzack's temple, for those of you who are interested in finding out more about what he needs. The other two, one of them is from the Wild Hunt blog, which is, you know, a very good blog on pagan issues that discusses what's going on. And the other one is the Indiegogo link for the Matron of Seville, for those people who are looking, you know, who want to help out and donate. They are still very far away from their goal, and they have, I think, less than a month at this point to do it. So if there's people out there that want to help them out, then, you know, hopefully I can use, you know, whatever listenership I have to help them out, you know. That's what I'm hoping to do, which is ironically related to our topic tonight. So we're going to get to that in a second. The next bit that normally we do is talk about basically a deity of the day. And since today's topic is about technology and cyber paganism, I thought we could spend a little bit of time talking about Prometheus.
I'm sorry, do you want me to chime in on that?
Yeah, if you could, you know, lend, you know, your expertise, since you are the priest of the Temple of the Greek Gods, and you do your own blog at my, you know, myhellenicwife.blogspot.com, you know, you know, talk to our listeners a little bit about what your impressions are of, you know, Prometheus.
Well, I think that I think the meanings surrounding him have evolved a lot since ancient times. Most certainly, he encompasses more technology than he did in ancient times, and I think that Prometheus is a god that encourages humanity to reach for something better than what they have. I think he's a god that encourages us to advance ourselves in whatever we're doing, whether it be technology, career, family life, religious life, whatever it may be. I actually, back when in the early days of our temple, when we decided that our temple denomination would be Neo-Hellenic Polytheism officially, even though now we accept all denominations of Hellenic Polytheism, but back then we identified as the Neo-Hellenic denomination. And Prometheus was almost like a... To me, he was almost like a patron of the temple because of our denomination, because Neo-Hellenic polytheism is modern Hellenic polytheism. It adopts to the modern times. And so Prometheus would definitely be an inspiration in that, because he encourages us to move on from the past and to build something better.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the original... idea of Prometheus was the one that stole the fire, you know, Zeus's fire that was a gift from Hephaestus. And, you know, the whole idea is that the fire represents something that humanity, when humanity has control of that, they have more control over their environment, their lives, and so forth and so on. There's so much that's connected to fire. That of, you know, what we have now, you know, the ability to forge, and, you know, what we think of it nowadays is technology. And so, you know, if you think about all the things that we have in our lives because of technology, it's just staggering, you know. And you can talk about the technology trap and stuff like that and how much we depend on it, and that's true. But at the same time, we've been able to enrich and better our lives because of technology in ways that are almost unfathomable at this point. You know, I don't think any of us can really grasp completely what life would have been like in ancient times before all the stuff that we have now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's good that groups like us have technology, because I really think that the pagan community wouldn't be the same without the internet. You know, there's so much that we're able to do online that it's, you know, we wouldn't be the same without it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can,
you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, it's obviously a better way to communicate and spread information than in ancient times, because in ancient times, the best they had were scrolls before they had books. And, you know, those were easily manipulated. They were easily destroyed. And a lot of them were lost or unaffordable. But now if you have the internet, it doesn't cost anything to look up information on anything you want to find. So I think that the internet has definitely helped paganism grow a great deal.
It's true, you know. There's essentially what I would think of as kind of, you know, four categories of, you know, kind of pagan, of cyber paganism, so to speak. there's information, there's community, there's activism, and then there's kind of your divine connection and spiritual connection. And I think if you think of all those four things, are part of cyber paganism. Like they are, you know, paganism in general also has those things. But if you think about all the ways that we're able to utilize the internet to do those things, it's amazing, you know. And for me, I became pagan before I had the internet. And so it's easy for me to kind of juxtapose, you know, pre-internet pagan versus post-internet pagan. And it's like night and day, because we used to, me and my friends who had formed a coven here in Freeport, we used to order books from Azure Green and from Isis Books, because those were the two places that we knew had catalogs and stuff like that. And we'd have to wait weeks for these books, and then, you know, basically we'd just get all of our information from books. But nowadays you can access actual pagan leaders and people that, you know, like I have so many pagan authors that I used to just read their material. I now have them on my Facebook, you know. So if I have a question, I can ask Oberon Zell directly. If I have a question, I can ask Dane McCoy directly, and you know, Raven Digitalis and Raven Kildera and Raven Grimasi and, you know, Mark Mandrake and, you know, all these different people that are leaders in the pagan community, Don Lewis, Ed Hubbard, you know. I know them on Facebook. You know, I can ask them their questions directly. Think about the distance that I had between me and all these other people who were pagan back before the internet, and the distance between us now. It's there's no comparison.
And, you know, that's an example of what I'm talking about. Back when I said about how Prometheus encourages us to move on from certain things in the past and move on to something better, that's what I'm talking about. In our time, we can form online groups, we can form blogs, stuff like that. We have so much more unity, and there is no one who's excluded. You know, back in ancient times, a lot of times the cults, for example, had specific members, or the temples may have had specific members. But in our time, you know, if we form an online group, we can assemble a great number of people, sometimes more than the amount who were in the religious groups in ancient times. And it gives us a strong sense of unity, and it also helps us protect our rights better, because we can be notified in an instant of something that's going on halfway across the country.
Most definitely, you know. And it's not just stuff that happens online. We also find out about stuff that happens in you know, in our locale, you know, on the internet. You know, for example, you know, all the different events that they have at Cleo's Aroma Apothecary in Rockford, Illinois. You know, we find out about the events they have there, and then we get to go to them in real life, and we might not have found out about those events if we didn't have the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Magical Hummingbird in the chat room is saying Raven Buckland is also available to communicate on Facebook. And I guess I agree with that. I'm friends with him on Facebook, too. he's actually one of my favorite authors. I have lots of Ray Buckland books. But anyway, there's a lot of different ways that people can connect to each other that way. You know, that's like the spirituality part. We get to enrich our spirituality by finding more people who are of like mind. You know, there's lots of different people that I would have never met, you included my husband, if it hadn't been for the internet.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, for those of you who don't know, you know, my husband and I met online. You know, I lived in Illinois, he lived in North Carolina, and so if it had not been for the internet, there, you know, we would never gotten together. We would not have known each other existed. So, you know, it's just another way that the internet helps pagans, and I think that as technology progresses, more people having more access to the internet, whereas, you know, like it used to be you had to sit down at a computer to access the internet, but now a lot of people have smartphones and Androids and iPhones and things like that, so they can take the internet with them. And so you don't even have to kind of shirk any real-life activities to spend time online. But there's a lot of ways that I think the internet has helped pagans, and the more the internet progresses, the more I see paganism and pagans getting more mainstream. And I think the two are directly connected.
Yeah. What I like the most about online cyber paganism is the fact that you know, large groups can be assembled for a particular group or worship or whatever it may be. When I look back at ancient times, I do not like the idea of cults. I do not like the idea of people being excluded. I don't like the idea of you know, being totally separate from your religious community. I like the idea of unity and everybody being together.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, that the internet can do for us is that we can find more people who are interested in the activities that we're doing. You know, and the temple of the Greek gods has flourished as a you know, because of the internet in many different ways. We found a great number of pagans who are interested in coming to our events online. And also we're able to do our entire incorporation online.
I'm always encouraging people to start their own blogs and stuff like that, because the pagans are an oppressed group in the country, in this country, one of the most oppressed. I would certainly say we're in the top three most persecuted religions in the country. And the more we keep our voices silent, the more people don't see us and the more people don't understand about us, the more that's going to happen. The more diversity that's out there, the harder it is to oppress. And so I'm always encouraging people to start their own online group or blog or website or whatever it may be they want to do.
Well, that's it. Everybody's got their own way of building community, you know. Some people have chosen, you know, the sacrifice of being clergy, you know. And I do consider the calling of clergy to be a sacrifice as well as a blessing. And, you know, for those, there's a lot of people who are called to do that. And before, they would have had no way to, you know, become certified, to get any kind of recognition. But because of the internet, you can take classes online and, you know, either from places like Cherry Hill Seminary or from witchschool.com and all the other different schools that you can go to online. And, you know, and take that path. Or you can, you know, blog about your experiences and be like, you know, like we said, the Wild Hunt. Or you also have a blog, too, that, you know, I think you hit a certain milestone of listeners, too, I think, or viewers of your blog recently, didn't you?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Did you post most recently that you had hit a certain view count on your blog?
Yes, over 7,000.
Wow. That's pretty good considering your blog is relatively new.
It is. I promote it a lot.
Well, I don't think it's just because you promote it. I think it's because you have good in, you have some really kind of in-depth discussions that you put on there too. You know, to give you an example, for those people who haven't, you know, read Chris's blog and why I like it. It's not just because he's my husband. and it's not just because he's cute, you know, even though, you know, both of those things apply to him. I think that one of the things is that's neat about his blog is that he'll take some sort of concept that we're all familiar with, like the myth of Theseus, for example, and he will take parts of the Theseian myth and break them down and put them into understanding the terms that we can all understand. And, you know, his blog on what he calls Theseian philosophy was very, very deep and thoughtful, and I think everybody should read. So, you know, I think that it's just a very interesting perspective, and it's something that, you know, a lot of other blogs deal with pagan rights issues or Wicca 101 and so forth and so on. And this is just, it's different than your normal blog that you find on the internet.
I would say so. I'm glad you brought up Theseian philosophy because it's a fairly new concept that I came up with, and I'm actually planning on writing a small book about it.
Yeah, it is a very interesting concept, and I, you know, I think that it's something that you probably could turn into a book if you wanted to. You know, if that's something that I know you've got another book in the works right now, but, you know, probably maybe when that's done, you can go on to something else.
Oh, the Theseian book will be out before my current project because the Theseian book will be a much, much shorter book. So it'll probably be out probably in the next month or so.
Good. That sounds fantastic. All righty. Well, it's almost the halfway point, so I am going to go to commercial real quick, and then we'll be back with more talk on cyber paganism and maybe even take some calls.
And remember our books, Witch School's first, second, and third degree lessons, Ritual and Theory in Practice, and Living the Wiccan Life, available from Llewellyn. Everything you always wanted to know about God, the universe, and everything, available at a bookstore near you.
I'm back. Chris had other obligations, so he's not going to join us for the rest of the show. If there's anybody who wants to call in share their thoughts on the subject, they can. The call-in number is 347-308-8222. And tonight's topic is cyber paganism. We've already talked to a little bit about some of the venues and some of the ways that cyber, you know, kind of the internet and has helped pagans branch out and expand their paths and not only enrich their online lives but enrich their offline lives as well. So we've discussed how people find events in their area, how people find different groups of people who are like them and community build and how they learn. We started off the show talking a little bit about pagan rights and pagan activism, like we do pretty much every show. There's almost always a pagan activist topic coming up. And I think that one of the reasons why we as pagans have become so much more visible is because we've become more active and we're, fighting back for our rights and so forth and so on. And we're finding out about other people who are doing the same thing. So, and that's all made possible by the internet. So, for example, the topics that we've, in December, we did a show about the top 10 pagan moments. And a lot of those had to do with pagan activists just fighting for their rights and having small victories. And I think that, we saw how activism can culminate through the internet in earlier movements, like in 2007 when Selena Fox spearheaded the Pentacle Project to get the Pentacle as a Wiccan emblem for headstones at Veterans Administration gravestones. I think that that was one of the earlier ways that we saw pagans kind of come together through the internet to get something done. Ethereal in the chat room makes a comment as well. She says that, I'm sorry, I believe it's she. I'm guessing. Says being online makes it easier to quote unquote come out as pagan because you already know that you aren't alone, and that's very true. I think that that a lot of people, used to not tell their parents and not feel like they had any kind of support system for telling their family about their faith. And I think that it is true that the internet gives people an outlet to find others who have gone through the same experiences as them, and so they don't feel so alone. And coming out is one of those things, you know. It's a very difficult thing to do. There's other, you know, there's other ways that we can use the internet for support, you know, like, you know, support groups and stuff, things like that. But for the pagan community, which is so scattered, it's a good outlet for the times when you feel the most alone, like when if you're being bullied at school or discriminated at work, and, you know, are going through things that are uniquely pagan, you know. That's a good example. Coming out is a good example. And another one would be discrimination, because I think a lot of people believe that if they're in a hostile work environment, that they just have to deal with it, their coworkers constantly trying to convert them, or, you know, being passed up for promotion because of their religion and stuff like that. I've been there. I've done that. You know, it was bad at one point, especially about 10 years ago. Not so much nowadays. People know their P's and Q's better nowadays, but it used to be that they just thought that they could trample right over you and that you didn't matter because you weren't, you know, the right religion. And it's unfortunate, but it does happen. So thank you, Ethereal, for bringing that up and sharing that with us. If anybody has any other examples of how they've used the internet or any kind of technology to expand their pagan path, by all means, share it with us. As I mentioned before, the call-in number is 347-308-8222. And, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the matter, too, if anybody wants to call in. I know I didn't do any tarot readings today. I apologize for that. I do plan on doing that on further shows, though, to do that. And Mark is also planning on doing some segments, even though they may not be live segments, but he's going to be doing some segments that he's going to at least record and play on the air for us in regards to giving advice to pagans. So we're going to get that rolled out for you guys. And if anybody has any questions they want to ask Mark, they can go to the Pathless Travel page on Facebook and post the questions there, and I will get them. If you want a more private venue to do it, you can always message Mark or myself. My Facebook is facebook.com/bluefirewitch. Very easy to find. And you can message me, and I will make sure that Mark gets the message and records something for you. So he's going to be doing advice. Essentially, it'll be like intuitive readings and tarot readings based on people's on what people need from him. So there's a lot to be said about that. And Magical Hummingbird brings up an interesting point, too. And it's something that I've heard about, and I'm not really sure why Wikipedia is targeting pagan leaders in this way, but there's a list of pagan articles that are up for deletion on Wikipedia, and they're basically people who are pagan in our community, have a following in our community, and apparently Wikipedia doesn't think that they're interesting enough or popular enough to keep pages there. People like Patricia Monahan, and I think there's other people who are on there too. Patricia Monahan, I do believe she recently passed away. And some people had set up a Wikipedia page for her. Now, I know that Wikipedia has a lot of, guidelines for, you know, how many how many you know, how popular somebody has to be. But you know, I think that there's an article on this on the Witch School page as well that I ran into that I will that I'll pulse for you guys if you're interested in reading that. You know, there's a lot of ways that I think that our activism has been stepped up since being so kind of savvy on the internet. Another way that's helped is fundraising. It used to be that you had to go around, you know, and you know, either sell things or beg people for money just to get things off the ground. But nowadays, people can do Indiegogo or fundraiser or Kickstarter and get their kind of ideas off the ground in ways that they were never able to before. Pagan businesses are another good way, another good example. Especially with the economic downturn, you've seen a lot of you know, brick and mortar stores, pagan and otherwise, you know, shut down. And thankfully, we still have a lot of online shops to choose from. I mentioned earlier in the show that when I was first pagan, I used to get a lot of my books from places like Isis Books and Azure Green because they had catalogs. Nowadays, AzureGreen.com is still a great website to go to if you're looking for pagan stuff. The WitchSchool.com's also got their own shop, and IsisBooks.com is another one that I still visit regularly because they have a good selection of stuff that you can get online. And the more that you buy from these people, the more selection there will be. So I try as much as possible to buy pagan supplies from pagan shops. I'm not always good about it, especially when it comes to books. I have an Amazon.com addiction, but I really should buy my books from pagan shops, and I'm bad about that. It's something that I should get better at, but I don't buy enough pagan books from pagan bookstores. I almost always get my pagan books from Amazon just because I'm used to it. But I shouldn't do that. Anyway, it is about quarter till, and so we're going to take one more little break, and we will be back with you real soon.
Be more than an incredible ritualist. Be an effective leader for your community. My book, Bridging the Gap, Working Within the Dynamics of Pagan Groups and Society, is geared towards filling the common gaps in our community by using techniques as tools to assess, understand, and work with the changing dynamics of any group or coven by using common counseling techniques. The book discusses tools around anger management, assessment, boundaries, behavior shaping, restorative justice, conflict resolution, maintaining a healthy group mind, and mentoring. As paganism evolves, it is becoming clearer that being an incredible ritualist is not all that is needed to be a competent leader or member of our pagan community. It is necessary for us pagans to have tools and skills in dealing with a myriad of issues that can plague any group or society. Pick up your copy of Bridging the Gap by Crystal Blanton today at your local metaphysical shop or order through www.crystalblanton.com, Amazon, or the Emanuan Press website.
Okay, everybody. Just a few minutes left of the show. I'm still able to take callers if you want. Call number is 347-308-8222. Tonight we're talking about cyber paganism and all the ways that technology has helped pagans in their path and grow and so forth and so on. And we've covered a lot of different ways that that's happened. We talked about kind of pagan outreach and how it's made things like coming out to your parents and coming out to your friends and family easier, and pagan activism, and found out about some different types of activism and different things that are going on right now that we probably wouldn't have known about if it hadn't been for the Internet. The Internet has helped us tremendously in ways that I don't think we can quite grasp, but it's still something that is a very useful tool for pagans. Something we have not discussed that we should discuss is online rituals and online collaborations, online pagan magical workings, if you will. One thing that a lot of people don't realize is that if you don't have a group nearby you, you can still participate in community rituals. And a lot of people do this through different sites. And as the Internet has gotten bigger, better and better, the ease of use of the Internet and the increase of broadband and the different tools that you can use on the Internet, like webcams and chat features like Skype and Google Hangouts and things like that, have made doing online rituals something that went from being something that was very, very difficult to do, but now is very easy to do. And I think that it's something very nice. It's kind of like our when I was a kid on Sunday mornings, I always used to hate turning on the television because it was nothing but church. You look at all the different stations and it would be one pastor after another having church service on TV. And my mom said, well, don't be too angry at them. What they're trying to do is reach the shut-ins, the people that aren't able to make it to church, so that they can feel like they're still part of a church community. And I guess that the our answer to that is to do online rituals. You know, unlike church, you know, like a Christian church where you just sit there and listen to somebody else and then pray quietly, our rituals are more interactive, more participatory. So instead of, you know, it wouldn't really translate very well to have a pagan just get up and do ritual in front of a bunch of people, because that, you know, wouldn't translate very well. But to be part of that ritual and to do and to have an actual part online where you can, you know, where you've got one person in California calling the West Corner and somebody on the East Coast in, you know, Maryland calling the East Corner, and somebody in Texas calling the South Corner, and somebody in Minnesota calling the North Corner, you know, and doing a ritual that way. I've participated in rituals like that. I've led rituals like that. And I've also helped people who have never led a ritual before lead their first ritual online. And I think that for people who are interested in becoming pagan leadership, starting to do online rituals is a great way to kind of get your feet wet, because you can gather a bunch of people together and do a working with people, and, you know, it doesn't take a lot of setup and things like that, like, you know, reserving a space and doing this or that, you know. It's a lot easier to set things up online and just say, hey, here's the link to the chat room. Come here at a certain time. We're going to be on Stick'em, and, you know, come join us. And, oh, by the way, you're going to be calling the West Corner tonight because you live in L.A., you know. we've done things like that before, and it's great, and it's very, you know, spiritual workings. We did this is a few years back. I want to say that this was 2007 or 2008 that we did a ritual to promote gay rights. And I did it with a bunch of my friends online, and we remembered a lot of our friends who had lost their lives either through gay bashing or through constant bullying. They had taken their own lives. And we did a remembrance piece, and we also, you know, just sent some energy out towards the goal of, you know, equality. And it was very spiritual and very deep. And a lot of people don't think that they can do that online, but, and it does take a little bit of getting used to, but you can have a very real and very rich experience online in a ritual setting. It just takes, you know, obviously a lot of interaction. And I think in a lot of ways, if you've got a good group and group that you know quite well to do an online ritual, it can become very intimate, even though you're very far away from each other. So my online ritual experiences have been very positive and very good. I don't know how other people felt that way. And Ethereal makes a good point about, you know, circling the entire country. But in actuality, I've actually done them with people who lived in other countries as well. We did one ritual where there was also a guy from the UK and someone from the Netherlands and somebody from Australia as well who also took part. I think they were kind of staying up past their bedtime to join us. But but they were gracious enough to meet us on an American time frame, so we were glad to have them. And it's been a while since I've done an online ritual, and maybe I'll do one again in the not so distant future. But we had some great experiences using Stick'em doing that, and Stick'em is a little bit different now than it was back in like 2007, 2008. Stick'em was a great site. Not so much anymore. It's kind of been flooded with a bunch of crap. You could probably do a better experience now with something like Google Hangout than you can with Stick'em or some other site like that. But it's all up to you what you find works best for you. If you're going to do an online ritual, I would probably suggest doing it with people that you know first, you know. Say you used to be with a group and then you moved far away, an online ritual is a great way to still collaborate with those people. But anyway, it is the end of our show. I want to thank everybody in the chat room. I have got great guests in the chat room who are all collaborating with me and answering back. So I want to thank those people who are listening to me. I'm very thankful for all your listenership. And for those of you who listen in archives, I thank you too. You're missing out, though, if you're not in the chat room. The chat room is where the action is. If you want some of the links that we posted in the show, come look at the Pathless Travel page, and I'll post them all there. Anyway, have a nice night, everyone, and blessed be.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.